Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Katie Balls. Boris Johnson is on his second day in Europe today, meeting President Macron. Fraser, how has that trip gone?
A rather different vibe to the meeting with Angela Merkel. I mean, he emerged... To say triumphant is exaggerating, but he had a little bit of an olive branch from Merkel. She was saying that maybe we can agree in 30 days, a new deal. The very prospect of a new deal is something which the rest of the EU hadn't offered. So he was really clear to see that as a success. He came out with his little German jokes, and overall, he wasn't a complete clown. He looked reasonably the part. Diplomatically, he certainly achieved more than Theresa May tends to have achieved in these summits. Mind you, that's not saying much, because these summits were pretty much disastrous for her. But Mr. Macron is different. He has basically said that the backstop, which Boris Johnson says wants to come out, he's saying, no, it's absolutely pivotal, it's got to stay. You cannot reconcile those positions. So Ms. Merkel saying, yes, maybe 30 days to think of something else. If you don't want the backstop, maybe we can think of something else. The French saying, no, forget it, the backstop stays. And I think those two positions illustrate the problem, the wider conundrum. Germany is talking common sense, thinking, look, why do we go through this disruption? Why are we going to have 10% tariffs on these German cars? And by the way, the German economy is teetering on the brink of massive recession. The last thing they want now is turbulence that might tip it over into this. So let's see if we can agree a deal, if practically possible. In other words, economics first. The French are different. Emmanuel Macron thinks, well, look, Britain wants to leave a club, but it also wants all the benefits. Of course, we can't let the British get away with this, because if we do, then what might follow? Who might want to follow Britain out of a door? Macron famously told Andrew Marr that even the French would probably vote to leave the EU if given the chance. And so he wants to show that the road out of the EU is a flinty and hard and long road that does not have a promised land at the end of it. And also, the main advocate for leaving the EU is Marine Le Pen, his great antagonist. So when Macron sees Boris Johnson, he really thinks of Marine Le Pen. He sees his lips move, but he can hear her voice. So he wants to show that Brexit will not work out well. In other words, politics comes first. So in these two visits, Boris has drawn out the problem. There is a great desire, not just in Germany, but moreover, to have a common sense solution and agree a deal. But then again, there are massive political obstacles which say that the EU, having promised to hold firm, needs to hold firm. And if it doesn't, then what might be next? Might you get Matteo Salvini, who's about to get a big majority, coming banging on its door saying, OK, you caved into Boris. Let's see if you're going to cave into me when it comes to immigration controls. So economics versus politics, which will win? My guess is that politics will win, because in Brussels it tends to do.
Katie, can I ask you about this 30-day deadline that Merkel seems to have given Boris Johnson overnight? And today Macron as well said that he needs more visibility of these alternative arrangements before 30 days. Just explain what that means for the negotiations.
I think if you look at the conversation between Angela Merkel and Boris Johnson, she talked about the fact that they've been trying to solve the Irish border issue, and they had thought that you could do that in the next 2 years, almost pointed to the transition period, which was meant that you'd have the backstop, then you would use that time to come up with a solution, which means you wouldn't ever have to actually activate the backstop. But he said, you know, who knows, perhaps you could do it in 30 days. Now, Macron is not so optimistic, but he didn't completely close down the idea of renegotiation. He said that ultimately that Britain needed to be clear in what it was proposing to replace the backstop or changes. I think that if you speak to various figures in government, they're quite keen to, in a way, play down how much of an opportunity this is for Boris Johnson. All the papers today are splashing on this 30-day deadline as a big Brexit breakthrough. But I think there's a concern amongst some in government that actually this is a little bit about the blame game. And the EU don't want to look as though they are responsible for a no-deal Brexit. Boris Johnson has been very keen to work out who is to blame if you get there. He's tried to blame the EU. He's also pointing at those MPs in his own party who are contradicting his message and thereby, in his opinion, reducing his negotiating position. So if you look at that as a scenario on no deal, I think what Merkel is potentially doing is saying, we don't want a no deal Brexit either, but you need to come up with something workable. That's what Macron is also saying. Do we think for a second that what Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron think is workable on the backstop is anything that Boris Johnson has so far proposed? no. I think this is giving them time then to look as though they're having this conversation. Sure. I think there is still a heavy dose of scepticism in Downing Street that this is the paving the way. I think it is them trying to look like they're not being so difficult or, I suppose, stringent.
And the other thing is, let's say Angela Merkel is on Britain's side. That's how it's being spun right now, that Merkel's good cop and Macron is bad cop. Merkel also realises that Europe needs to save face. So, I don't think Germany can call the shots in the EU. Lots of Brexiteers have naively thought that a phone call from Berlin would settle the whole Brexit question. But, I mean, if anything, it's Merkel that's being bailed out by the EU leaders. They had a summit to pretty much help her survive as Chancellor a few months ago. So the support is going the other way around. And also, Merkel has realised she needs to keep the EU show on the road. This is a sort of Franco-German operation. So I don't think that she is going to veto Macron here. And let's not forget Leo Varadkar. He's the most important person here, because I think the EU has collectively decided that they cannot sort of overrule or pressurise Varadkar. They need him to change his mind. Now, I suspect that Varadkar would happily sign up to, for example, a 10-year time limit on the backstop right now, if it was offered. He wouldn't have done that a few months ago. I think he would do it now to get himself
out. Why do you think that?
Because I think the Irish are looking over the cliff, and they can see that there's quite a long way down for them.
But is there anything to show that he is considering?
Yeah, if you look at the debate in Ireland, it's changing. There was RTE yesterday, the Irish broadcaster was asking a lot of very hard questions about the lack of no-deal planning. The Irish, for example, have said they're not going to start coming up with contingencies as a matter of principle. He's beginning to get heat for this back home. And if he genuinely hasn't done any planning, it seems crazy to us Brits to imagine that the Dublin government has not been doing what Treasury officials and others have been doing. But if they haven't, isn't this a bit rash? We're what, 10 weeks away from Brexit and there aren't really practical considerations? So these questions are starting to be asked in Ireland. And if you follow the Irish debate, as I try to, and the Irish Times' coverage is absolutely excellent in this, then you can see the pressure turning on Varadkar. And I suspect if he were able to say, OK, I'll take a 10-year limit. By the way, that's a massive limit. I don't think Boris Johnson could get that past the Tories. But if he could, I think Varadkar would take it, because the dial has moved now. You can see the EU are open to things they were closed to before. So Boris Johnson is already making some degree of progress. I still don't think it will be enough progress. I still don't think there is going to be a deal at the end of this. And I still think that no deal is the most likely scenario. But, as I say in my Telegraph column tomorrow, it will be no deal with a whole bunch of little deals to mitigate most of the damage.
And not to be a gloomster or a doomster, as Boris Johnson would say, but it does feel as though perhaps the pressure is going to lead to further concessions than Theresa May managed to get out of Brussels. But how does that fit with the mood in the Commons? Mm-hmm. We already know there are a handful, I think growing number actually, of Brexiteers who don't think that removing the backstop is enough. They would want it to go further. And there's also the element of the more the government plans no deal, the more that there are certain Eurosceptics who think, well, perhaps that's preferable, because if you look at the withdrawal agreement and all these things, if Michael Gove keeps telling me that we've catered for all these issues, why don't we just do no deal? And we have that clearer exit. So I think that although you might make progress in Brussels, the political scene in the UK is changing at such a pace. The demand for that change, it is moving further away from a small one.
By the way, there is, I was talking to a government official earlier on this morning who was saying that the transport plans for no deal breakup are really quite further along than anybody thinks. But number 10 under Theresa May wouldn't let the transport department talk about this because they needed people to be worried about no deal. So if you say, for example, actually all of the aircraft routes are covered, we've actually got plans, the ships would be diverted via Belfast, and there's all sorts of contingency plans. If you were to spell that out too clearly, you might end up with Tory backbenchers thinking, OK, this is great, let's go for this and let's drop the deal. So you had that dynamic under Theresa May. Now, will Boris Johnson start to talk about no deal in the way that might make it sound appetising? Because let's face it, the great benefit of no deal for a lot of Tory backbenchers is it turns the page, it kills the Brexit Party stone dead. They're worried that Boris Johnson is going to basically put through Theresa May's deal with a couple of amendments. Mm-hmm. And the great question is the one Katie says, has their goalpost changed? Has their test changed? And if they do demand a lot more from Brexit than they were demanding under Theresa May, how much more? And we really don't know this. And, you know, are they bluffing, for example? Are they thinking, okay, we are demanding a lot more than just the removal of the backstop because we actually are prepared to concede halfway down the road? Everybody's playing game of bluff and double bluff, and nobody's quite sure what people will settle for.
Yeah, I mean, I bumped into, and they will go unnamed, a Brexiteer MP earlier this week who, rather than spending their summer holidays sunning on the beaches, was walking around Parliament and basically said they were going over all these changes and really examining them and were unhappy with this letter. And this is one of the people who's not yet gone public. So I do think that
and
there
happy
is...
with Boris Johnson's letter?
Yes, Boris Johnson's letter to Tusk, they were expressing their concerns over it. Now, I think there's a sign that given that at that point Tusk has said there's no way we're even accepting this change as though, and this person was still worried about the change being requested, there is a deep sense of paranoia in amongst the Brexiteers in Parliament, or at least a portion of them, because they feel under Theresa May they were repeatedly led to believe things that turned out not to be the case. And they all very clearly point to the fact that Boris Johnson did vote for the withdrawal agreement once.
Interesting. Fraser and Katie, thanks very much. And to hear more about what Boris Johnson's no-deal message should or will be, Katie has written a very good political column in this week's magazine, and we have been talking to Poppy Trowbridge, who is former advisor to Philip Hammond, Stuart Jackson, who is former Tory MP and also used to advise David Davis, as well as Ian Wright from the Food and Drink Federation on the Spectator podcast this week. So tune in to Spectator podcast or Spectator Radio this evening to hear that. And if you enjoy these daily shots of political analysis, why not sign up for our daily email, Evening Blend? It's now Britain's most read political email, and every day you get analysis on it from Isabel Hardman and Katie Balls. So to sign up, just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.